Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why? Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 116, The Universe. Well, it's a big place. And as we've discovered on this podcast, it's full of stories. As well as that one big story about how, and even why, the universe came to be. Dear Cheap Astronomy, just why? Asking why the universe is doesn't have to be a spiritual inquiry into purpose. We can already look across the universe and observe that things happen in very predictable patterns, following determinable and repeatable pathways of cause and effect, which are all moving in the general direction of increasing entropy. Essentially, the universe is spreading out, and hot spots of activity are cooling over time, and it looks like this will just keep on happening until everything in the universe eventually reaches a cold and uniform temperature. So there clearly is an inevitability built into the way that things happen, but it's a bit of a stretch to define that as purpose. So, leaving the whole issue of purpose to one side, the question we can grapple with in this episode, is about inevitability. So, did the Big Bang happen because it's inevitable that something has to arise from nothing? But before we go there, we need to consider whether it did actually arise from nothing. Current, though very hypothetical thinking, envisions a quantum vacuum, being a vacuum that has no space-time, but which is nonetheless bubbling with virtual particles that spring in and out of virtual existence. So, while such a quantum vacuum is technically nothing, it is also a potential something waiting for the right trigger to become a real something. There's also some equally fluffy thinking about gravity, which arguably has an independent existence as a potential influencer, even though it can only become an actual influencer, in the presence of space-time, mass, and energy. So, perhaps, somehow, the quantum vacuum and gravity interacted in a way that made the Big Bang happen. Well, at least maybe, and that's a very big maybe. It's not hard to float a whole range of conceptual models which, in the absence of any data, can neither be confirmed or refuted. What perhaps is worth grappling with is that prior to the Big Bang, there was no space-time. This isn't quite the same as saying there was nothing, but it does make questions about what happened before the Big Bang a bit meaningless. The Big Bang was the first event. There couldn't have been any preceding steps leading up to it, since there was no time over which such steps could proceed, nor could there have been any separated ingredients that came together to make it all happen, since there was no space over which things could either be separated or come together. Nonetheless, here we are. So clearly something happened. We can reasonably hypothesize there must have been an underlying dimensionless foundation from which the Big Bang arose. Indeed, such a dimensionless foundation could underlie a multiverse of parallel universes, although you need to be careful not to envision a larger space within which those parallel universes sit. Anything that's outside a space-time universe can't also be space-time, nor have any of the qualities of space-time. That means there's a similar problem with envisioning sequential universes, where one universe is born, expands and dies, and then a new one happens. That could only make sense if there was some kind of external timeline operating outside of those space-time universes. It might be the case that a new universe arises from the ashes of an old one, but if there is a direct causal connection between them, then they're not really separate universes. It's all just one Phoenix universe. But anyway, back to the question of why. It could be that a Big Bang universe is an inevitable outcome of whatever underlying physics exists independently of it. Or it could be that the Big Bang was a ridiculously unlikely outcome of that underlying physics. Could be that the Big Bang was a ridiculously unlikely outcome of that underlying physics. Although that's kind of like saying that for every event that happens, there are a million and one non-events that don't happen. Either way, all you're ever going to know is that one event happened. And that is what we currently know. So, was the universe inevitable? Well, it did definitely happen. So yeah, kind of.
This is the middle bit.
Well, that was our attempt at being deep, but still somewhat scientific, noting that most of what we just said is highly hypothetical. But even beyond the big story, there's still all sorts of deep stuff to think about within the universe. And not so much about why we are here, but is anyone else? Dear Cheap Astronomy, will we ever make contact with aliens in another star system? Here at Cheap Astronomy, we don't think astronauts, taikonauts, or any other noughts will ever be exploring other stellar systems. There's nowhere we could get to outside the solar system within a lifetime, and generational starships would just be Lord of the Flies in a tin can. Instead, we'll send robots with 3D cameras so our great-grandkids can virtually explore those places. And of course, there'll probably come a day when those robots cut the umbilical and just go off on their own self-replicating path, becoming the next evolutionary step after us. But anyway, the realization that we're never going to physically travel anywhere interstellar should be closely followed by the realization that none of the aliens will either, so all that stuff about it being too risky to let anyone else know we're here, in case they invade, does seem a bit on the paranoid side. After all, most of Earth's resources are ubiquitous across the universe, and it's unlikely the planet that we evolved on is going to be especially habitable to an alien species that evolved somewhere else. Nor is it likely that such an alien species will want to eat us. Indeed, given we haven't heard a peep out of anyone yet, it's conceivable that everyone else is also just starting out, and also coming to the same realization that they'll probably never leave their own stellar system, and hence they may also be busy developing their own outbound robot progeny, while spending their idle moments staring up at the stars and wondering if they're alone. So, someone's got to start the conversation, and right now, it looks like the ball's in our court. And to date, we have already undertaken a few interstellar transmissions. Here's a list. 1. A radio transmission of Morse code, directed at Venus in 1962. The whole exercise made no real sense, and wasn't really interstellar, but it is generally recognised as our first small step. 2. Frank Drake's Arecibo message, which was transmitted to Messier 13 in 1974 and contained a depiction of DNA, human morphology, basic mathematics, and a radio telescope. 3. The Cosmic Call, 1999, and again in 2003. The Cosmic Call, or calls, were a series of messages with depictions of numbers and chemical elements, and also Frank Drake's earlier message, all directed towards a collection of relatively near, sun-like stars. 4. A Message from Earth, 2008. The message was directed at exoplanet Gliese 581c, and it will get there in 2029, after which it's only another 21 years to receive a reply back, presuming any recipient has the right equipment and inclination to answer back. The message was full of photos, drawings and text messages from celebrities, so it will at least look manufactured, even if it doesn't look that intelligent. 5. Speaking of intelligent, also in 2008, we transmitted the Beatles song Across the Universe to Polaris. We'd also sent some theremin music to a collection of closer stars back in 2001. And why? Well, because we could. 6. In 2012, we sent replies to the WOW signal at some potential sources of the WOW signal, but again, text messages and celebrity video clips. But the scientists did at least add on a repeating header signal, so the end result hopefully looks both manufactured and a bit intelligent. 7. In 2013, the loan signal was established, intended to be a continuous crowd-funded beacon to be funded by anyone who wanted to send a signal. People were allowed to send one free 144-character Twitter format message, and then they could send even more, longer messages and images at their own modest cost. The beacon was going to have a carrier signal with some scientific cleverness built in, but in the end, nah. There was some hubbub about drawing too much extraterrestrial attention to ourselves, and they just never got enough paid subscribers, so the whole thing never got off the ground. 8. Well, let's just say there were yet more music broadcasts. There is a genuine concern that when SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, finally does isolate a clearly manufactured signal, the best minds on our planet will spend years analysing its intricacies, only to discover it's just some self-indulgent alien boondoggle. You reap what you sow.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. We're too terrified to talk to aliens, but we don't mind playing music at them. And we wonder why none of them want to talk to us. As we've discussed, it is a real big universe, and it's a pretty safe bet that warp drive is never going to happen, so no one is very likely to ever visit in person. So, what the heck? We might as well swap encyclopedias, or Wi-Fi passwords, or whatever. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to ask why and leave a long pause afterwards, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll go, whoa, dude, for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.